morning, everybody. I'll call this meeting of State Government Finance and Elections to order for today is Saturday, April 17th. And pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting is being held virtually. First order of business is the roll call. Ms. Spreck, can you want to take the roll?
Chair Nelson.
I think I'm here.
Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson present.
Representative Nash.
Present.
Representative Bonner.
Present.
Representative Drazkowski.
Present.
Representative Elkins.
Present.
Representative Greenman.
Present.
Representative Cleavorn.
Present.
Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick present.
Representative Mason. Representative New Brindley.
Present.
Representative Pulaski.
Pulaski present.
Representative Quam.
Present.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, Ms. Spreck. The next is the approval of the minutes from our last meeting, April 7th. Representative Cleavorn, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I move that the minutes from April 7th be adopted as written.
Thank you, Representative Cleavorn. Representative Cleavorn moves the minutes from April 7th, 2021. All those in favor of approval of the minutes, say aye.
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 Opposed? We have our minutes approved. Well, members, we have one bill up today, and I'd like to welcome Majority Leader Winkler to the committee. It's House File 600, and I'll move House File 600 and be re-referred to the Education Finance Committee. Representative Winkler, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This was not scheduled originally to punish the members of the State Government Finance and Elections Committee for a 12-hour debate on a Friday night leading us to midnight, but if it functions in that way, I guess that's just how it is. I want to thank you for taking the time this morning to hear this bill. The goal of House File 600 is to end the criminal prohibition of cannabis in Minnesota, to acknowledge that the criminal enforcement of cannabis in Minnesota is part of a broader war on drugs that has disproportionately impacted communities of color, especially Black Minnesotans, to create a safe, legal, and regulated marketplace for cannabis, shifting the illicit marketplace to the safe, legal, and regulated marketplace. We seek to provide criminal justice reform and make sure that those adversely affected through the criminal sanctions of the war on drugs have an opportunity to have their records expunged, to have an opportunity to participate in the upside, the opportunity of a new cannabis market, to right past wrongs in communities that have been adversely affected by the war on drugs, and to provide relief for patients who use cannabis for medical conditions so that they can better afford treatment and care. We also seek to save money by not spending law enforcement resources, criminal justice resources, court resources on enforcing a product that two-thirds of Americans, two-thirds of Minnesotans think should be legal. The way that we do this structurally as it applies to this committee is by creating an independent cannabis management board. When we started the process of looking at how to regulate cannabis in Minnesota, we took input from state agencies who thought that the cannabis management board should be essentially governed by designees of the relevant state agencies. We looked at what other states have done and concluded that creating a cannabis management board with a diversity of membership and also a clear set of goals. And I'll just read this to you from page 10. It's in section 2 of article 1. The goals of the cannabis management board are to promote public health and welfare, protect public safety, eliminate the illicit market for cannabis and cannabis products, meet market demand for cannabis and cannabis products, promote a craft industry for cannabis and cannabis products, and prioritize growth and recovery in communities that experienced a disproportionate negative impact from cannabis prohibition. It's a tall order for any board to be able to manage on its own. We also create a Cannabis Advisory Council, which is larger, currently, I think, at 26 members and growing. There is so much interest in this issue that I suspect that by the time we are done creating the advisory committee, it will be roughly the size of the state Senate. And there is just a huge number of people who are interested in having their voices heard in advising the Cannabis Management Board. So, Mr. Chair, what we're doing in this bill is simply creating an independent structure, a board appointed by the governor with staggered terms, whose mission is to promote the purposes of the bill. They have regulatory authority. They have rulemaking authority. We give them a tall task in meeting the demands of the that in some ways conflict in this bill. And it's intentional that they are trying to struggle to meet those competing demands. So that's the bill. That's the provision. Those are the provisions that I think particularly apply to your committee. And I believe there are testifiers who would like to address the bill as well.
And before we get to that one, when you say the board's going to be larger than the Minnesota Senate, I hope it's more functional than the Minnesota Senate.
Mr. Chair, we could also shrink the Minnesota Senate to fit the size of the Cannabis Advisory Council.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Leader. Before we get started with the testifiers, I'd like Mr. Gehring to walk us through which portions of the bill, this is a large bill, and which portions of the bill are pertain to this committee. Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Representative Winkler just described some of the jurisdiction of this committee, but I would point you primarily to Article 1 of the bill. Particularly Article 1, Section 12 has to do, relates to the way that the this bill interacts with local governments, and there's some other scattered pieces in Article 1 that affect the way that local governments would interact with the board in various capacities. Ms. Roberts also sent around some fiscal notes for agencies within the committee's jurisdiction that were attached to the committee documents, and she might be able to describe those in more detail.
Ms. Roberts, if you want to give us that advice.
Mr. Chair and members, I did. You have the full fiscal note, but because it was 127 pages, I also pulled out the pieces for the three agencies that are clearly under this committee's jurisdiction. That's administrative hearings, Minute, and Department of Revenue. Administrative hearings is included because they would be involved in some hearings and rulemaking. Minute would provide IT support to the board. And then Department of Revenue, if you look at their fiscal note, they would need additional staff, and primarily in their special taxes division, but in some other divisions, and then an offsite facility for collecting cash payments.
Thank you, Ms. Roberts. With that, we'll go to our testifiers. The way I have it on the list here, the first one is Mayor Melvin Carter from the City of St. Paul. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, and good morning. My name is Melvin Carter, and I'm the mayor of the City of St. Paul, Minnesota. First, I want to thank Chair Nelson and committee members for giving me this time to share my strong support for House File 600, a bill to legalize cannabis in the state of Minnesota. Additionally, I want to thank you, Majority Leader Winkler, and all the legislators who've worked hard to advance this bill this year and last year. There are many reasons why I support legalizing cannabis in our state, ranging from allowing responsible use for adults to establishing a fair and equitable system to support small businesses to decriminalizing the use of cannabis that disproportionately impacts people of color. I'll review just a few of these reasons due to timing and the focus of this committee. The legalization of cannabis helps to shift a product that is already widely available for sale from an illicit market to a well-regulated one. In doing so, it ensures youth are not targeted. It ensures products are safe and allows for proper education of cannabis use. This bill is a significant step toward rectifying and redressing the disproportionate impacts of the war on drugs on communities of color. It prioritizes issuing business licenses to social equity applicants or residents of a census tract with 20% or higher poverty rates or 80% of statewide or major metro area median family income, and provides grant funding for investments in the communities where the applicants live. The bill provides grants to help social equity applicants with startup funding, workforce training, and technical assistance, and automatically expunges criminal records for non-felony marijuana offenses and establishes a cannabis expungement board to review and make expungement and resentencing decisions for felony offenses. This bill provides local governments with the necessary control we need to implement and enforce reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions on cannabis businesses, and also local tax revenue benefits from an increase in the sales tax base that will benefit local governments significantly. Finally, if we didn't know it last week, and if we didn't know it last year, it is very clear that right here in the state of Minnesota, we have to continually rethink and reinvent the ways in which we secure the peace and safety of our communities. The war on drugs, our cannabis policies have been such a core part of the harm done to communities across our country, communities across our state. This bill is an important part of undoing and reversing that harm. I urge you to support House File 600 so that Minnesotans can start to benefit from this new economy. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. If you want to hang around me, there may be questions. The next person on my list is Layla Fatahi. I hope I said that somewhat right. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Layla Fatahi, and I am the campaign manager for Minnesotans for Responsible Marijuana Regulation, or MRMR. We're a statewide, multi-partisan campaign organized by leaders from state and local units of government, a broad range of nonprofit organizations, Minnesota's business community, organized labor, and others. We formed MRMR with the goal of not just legalizing adult use cannabis in Minnesota, but rather, as the name of our group suggests, replacing the outdated, ineffective, and unjust policy of cannabis prohibition with a legal and policy framework that supports the responsible regulation of cannabis. And lots of people ask us, well, what do we mean by responsible? Well, when a government policy threatens the health and safety of our communities, it's the government that's responsible to fix that. And when a government policy has the effect of creating enduring injustice, the government is also responsible to correct that injustice and to redress its harms. And that's the situation at hand. Cannabis prohibition has failed to achieve every single one of its stated policy goals. It has taken a product that is objectively, poses less of a risk objectively to the public than alcohol or cigarettes do, and driven it into an underground market that lacks any consumer safety standards and is more readily accessible to children. And not only has it failed to keep our community safer and healthier, and instead it has unjustly criminalized people and communities of color and disenfranchised them from being able to access employment, housing, and other basic needs. So MRMR supports House File 600 because it sets up a policy framework and a regulatory structure that's capable of, one, promoting multiple areas of public health and safety for consumers, for children, for people using our roads, et cetera. Two, for supporting the creation of economic opportunities and investments across Minnesota, and especially in those communities that have been most disproportionately harmed by the war on drugs. And three, expunging the records or reconsidering the sentencing of individuals who've been unjustifiably prosecuted for selling or possessing small amounts of cannabis to the harm of no one. And these are the various boards and councils and other mechanisms that the bill creates, which I'm happy to discuss in more detail for any members who have questions. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you for that, for your testimony. Again, hang around. We'll have questions after all the testifiers. Next person on my list is Sarah Grew. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
You're muted, Sarah.
There we go. Good Good morning. My name is Sarah Grew. I'm joining you from California. This is my 14th year involved in the cannabis industry in California. I've sat on the California Growers Association Board of Directors, formed our Sierra County Growers Association, and I'm also co-founder of Crested River Hemp Company in Minnesota, which is my birth state. Upon reviewing this bill, I just want to compliment you that from my experience here in California, the regulation is really fairly well conceived by comparison to our state. I really think the statewide the monitoring system is good, that it's one agency. We see a lot of difficulties with the multi-agency regulatory system here. My main compliment is on the restriction of local control. That's been one of the biggest hardships and, in my opinion, failures in the California regulatory system. And so I want to applaud you on recognizing and addressing that. Having a universal statewide system and removing that ability for local control is going to help create a more robust and working system, working industry. I really want to applaud the prohibition of transfer of licensure. I believe that will be a really good thing for the state to promote local businesses and local ownership. We've had a lot of issues out here with the already established members of the industry being hedged out by venture capitalists, sort of businesses coming in and doing a lot of acquisitions, which has been a real shame for our local rural communities and our legacy cultivators. I want to applaud the prohibition of bulk producers, at least for the first early years of the industry's beginning there in Minnesota, again, to encourage those local businesses and the smaller businesses, really trying to keep the industry in the hands of mom and pop size businesses and keep your money local and within the state. As I reviewed your licensing structure, I think it's a really good system. The one particular hiccup we've had in California is that cultivators cannot transport their raw material off their farms, and it adds a great deal of expense and complication for them to contract with distributors just to bring it to a processing center, which might be just within a matter of miles from their farm. And upon review, I found that that has been addressed in this licensing structure, and so I want to applaud you on that. I'm really excited to see legalization of cannabis coming to my home state, and I really want to applaud the members that have drafted this bill for their careful consideration and review of what is and isn't working in other states. And I'd be happy to make myself available for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Grew. The next person I have on my list is Anthony Newby. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
You're muted.
There we go. Sorry about that, guys. Good morning, Honorable Chair Nelson and Honorable Committee members, including Representative Winkler. My name is Anthony Newby, and thanks for giving me an opportunity to share my views on cannabis legalization and House File 600 this morning. Again, my name is Anthony Newby. I'm a Minnesota native, and I'm the co-owner of a CBD business located downtown Minneapolis. My CBD brand, Cultivated CBD, is sold in 600 retail stores. We sell online and ship to over 30 states. I'm also a member of the Minority Cannabis Business Association, a network of cannabis operators throughout the country, helping to inform equitable cannabis policy in emerging states like Minnesota. My business partners range from vendors and hemp growers to staffers. All of us are hopeful that we'll be able to compete not only in the hemp and CBD space, but also the adult use space. And we think House File 600 provides an excellent framework for us to do that. Again, my CBD company In our company model, we hire staff and purchase from vendors with prior experience with the cannabis plant. This includes Black folks and folks of color who are eager for opportunities in the industry, folks from under-resourced communities like North Minneapolis, folks with direct experience with the war on drugs. These business principles, which we cook into our daily operating, again, procedures and principles, far from being a barrier for success, have been a primary reason for our success in the market. Our staff and our network, because of their lived experience, produce very high quality products. We give back to the community. We're highly motivated to lead the future of this emerging market. We live these business principles while working in a building just four blocks from the Chauvin Trial, a building which shares an alley with the first precinct in Minneapolis. We're surrounded by, frankly, a military checkpoint, and our staff passes a literal gauntlet of MPD officers and National Guard members just to get to work. And we're not the only ones. There are many other hemp and CBD operators trying to navigate the current moment while also competing in the hemp and CBD marketplace. And from our opinion, these folks deserve a chance to lead, in, not just participate, but also lead in the legal cannabis market. And again, House File 600, we think, gives us an excellent chance to do so. If I could for a minute just lean into some of the core principles in the bill, which I think make it one of the best equitable bills in the marketplace. And again, this comes from experience of scanning the landscape and looking for really what's working and what isn't working throughout the country. Number one, the criminal justice element and expungement for past cannabis charges, we think, is critically important. Not all states are doing that well. It's cooked into this bill, and we think it's great. More access and lower prices for folks in underserved communities. This bill will give access for folks who are, frankly, trying to treat symptoms like post-traumatic stress. And when we see what's playing out in Brooklyn Center, there are lots and lots of people who are simply trying to navigate and treat these sorts of conditions with an affordable, low-cost plant. And this bill would give folks access to do that. The Cannabis Management Board, which Representative Winkler mentioned, to help advise the legislature. Frankly, a legislature, with all due respect to the folks on this call, frankly, sometimes misses the mark when it comes to racial and gender commitments. And this board will certainly help that. Restrictions on local control that the previous testifier mentioned, we agree with that. We don't want local, any local sort of biased decision maker to lock out folks of color where those gaps already exist. The equity scorecard model for licensing, we think, is great. It will prioritize folks living in North Minneapolis, East St. Paul, Beltrami County, and outstate markets where folks have lower incomes and have really experienced the war on drugs in an inequitable way. This will prioritize those folks and give them a real opportunity. The craft model, which we really agree with, opens access for small operators, as opposed to giving deferential treatment to giant corporations, which has happened in other states. I could go on and on about House File 600. The bottom line is we've scoured the bill. Our friends throughout the country have scoured the bill. We believe it is the most equitable, or certainly one of the most equitable models that exists in the country. And it really gives Minnesota a chance to rebrand itself when it comes to racial equity. When we see what's playing out on our live streams and in our case, right outside of our back door, we need an opportunity to really reverse the trend when it comes to equity. And cannabis legalization under this model really gives us an opportunity to do that. Thank you all for the time and opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Newby. The next person I have on my list, and again, if you can hang around for questions, next person on my list is Julie Engel. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Okay. Sorry. I need to minimize this so I can see my, I'll just read it off the paper. Hi, my name is Julie Engel. I am 39 years old. And I have three adorably young boys, and I live in Minnetonka. For 4.5 years, I was very, very sick with mystery symptoms. They included chronic pain, debilitating fatigue, and brain fog. It was like having the flu, but it would last for months on end. As a very active young mom, I was not available for my family or kids during this very difficult time in my life. I was more focused on when my next doctor appointments were going to be. What were my traditional doctors going to put me on now? What were the side effects of all of these drugs? Which alternative doctor was I going to try? Or which diet was I going to see if worked next? Most importantly, how am I going to be healthy so I can live my life and be the mom that I used to be? I had a gut feeling my pharmaceutical drugs were making me sick, so I made a brave decision to go off all of them and start incorporating cannabis into my daily regimen. That was the best decision I've made in my life. For me, cannabis has been a gateway to a better life. I microdose every morning so that my body is calm without being high. I consume high THC at night before I go to bed so I can sleep through the night. I consume responsibly, and it has allowed me to be functional. Because cannabis literally gave me my life back, I became obsessed with the industry. I've spent the past 3 years fully immersing myself, going to conferences all over the United States, doing a lot of market research, and networking with some fantastic cannabis professionals. After a lot of analysis and study, I have formed an LLC and want to move forward as a female entrepreneur in the cannabis industry in Minnesota. I see how the path to a full adult legalization could benefit our communities by providing more resources, tools, access to the plant, jobs, and economic growth. I want so badly to let people know that there are alternatives to modern day medicine. I have a strong desire to give back to the community. And lastly, I want to break the stigma that is associated with cannabis usage. Thank you for your time and for listening to my story.
Thank you, Ms. Engel. That's all I have on the list for right now. We'll go to questions here and members. I just want to point out that we did invite the members from the local government committee to sit in on this committee hearing, and so they could participate and ask questions and participate in the discussion. But when we come to a vote, this is the State Government Finance Committee. They will not be able to vote. For right now, I only see one member that's from the local government committee that's not already on our committee. But members, questions? Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, committee members, and Representative Winkler. Good to see everybody again after last night and yesterday. Representative Winkler, can you speak a little bit the comprehensiveness of this bill as opposed to, I was just looking at a letter from the Minnesota Chamber talking about establishing a task force to kind of look into some of the issues more in advance, I guess. And then also what I normally hear when I talk to people in my district and different business owners is they don't particularly have a concern of what people do or don't do in their homes outside of their work hours, but they do have major concerns in some manufacturing facilities here in Lakeville, and I'm sure elsewhere across the state, of people being under the influence while they're working and operating equipment and that kind of stuff. And my understanding is we don't have a test to screen for that. I also I have an aunt that was in Illinois, outside of Chicago, operates, manages a number of high-end daycare facilities, and one of their workers came in under the influence, and it wasn't a good situation. They had some kind of something in their employment contract to that particular case. She admitted to using it. They took her to go get a test. Because she was high at the time. So can you talk about some of those employment things, and then also why not pare down this bill to get some effort? Because it's so comprehensive right now, I'm not sure that there's much of a path for it. But it's an interesting topic for certain, and so I've got some other concerns too, but why don't we start there? Thank you.
Majority Leader Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kosnick, so first of all, no employer is required to have anybody on their premises who is intoxicated or impaired in any way. So if an employee shows up drunk, if they show up high, if they show up under the influence of legal pain medication that they are taking because they have had surgery, you cannot require an employer to have those people on the premises. And this bill doesn't change that. You also can't, the only real difference, I mean, there's technicalities to it, but the real difference here is that you can't have a simple blood screening that bans workers from having any cannabis in their system whatsoever before coming to the job. You actually have to use an impairment standard. And you can actually have a full testing regimen based on cannabis along with other kinds of mood altering or substances that could change your performance if it's safety sensitive. So if it's safety sensitive, you can have a zero tolerance policy for anything. So we're not really impinging on the ability of precision manufacturers or people who are operating heavy equipment, companies like that, they can still prevent people from being on the job. But what you can't do is use employment that has no connection to safety or security to simply say you have to have a zero tolerance policy for any cannabis in your system. So you don't need a test on the job site for cannabis to be able to do that. You have to use the same kind of impairment standard if it's a regular job, you know, without safety sensitive aspects to it. You can't have a zero tolerance policy on cannabis. You have to treat it like you would other substances that could be mood altering or could affect performance, but then you actually have to have it affect performance. The other thing is employment is at will. So it's only if you have a testing regimen to begin with that you have to not treat cannabis differently than other substances. Employers, unless you're in a protected class for some reason, can always terminate employees for any reason whatsoever. And as to the comprehensive nature of the bill, I think the testifiers said it better than I can. The fact of the matter is we have states, so South Dakota already, North Dakota on its way, around us that have legalized. We're, I think, at the point of 15 states around the country. Cannabis is going to be more readily available. It will be more difficult to regulate it. The prohibition and criminal justice component of what of the current regulation model has serious adverse consequences for some people and doesn't work very well. And as cannabis becomes more the norm across the country, we are better off creating a fully formed, regulated system to deal with it than rather than taking half steps. And as far as a task force, effectively, that's what this bill represents. It is a task force that represents months and months of intense work by a lot of people to put together a bill that I think, as the testifier said, is in fact very much ready for prime time.
Representative Kosnick, follow-up.
Other members, let's hear some questions and I'll have some other comments.
Thank you. Representative Elkins, you're next on my list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler. So I just, you know, went reread Section 12, the local government section of it, and I've been thinking about, you know, what will cities, you know, want to do in terms of restricting the availability of marijuana stores within their boundaries. And the statute, the proposed statute, it clearly prohibits that, but I can imagine cities doing things like saying, if you want to open a marijuana store in our city, you can only do it in industrial zones. Like Bloomington has with pawn shops, you can only have two of them in the city. One of the problems I think we've observed in other states is that when the supply or the availability of stores is too limited, the black market just stays. Are you envisioning that that cities would license marijuana stores, you know, following the models that they have for their liquor stores, for example?
Majority Leader Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Elkins. So it isn't quite the same. The licenses for cannabis are issued by the board. So they're issued at the state level. Local governments can use their usual zoning rules like time, place, and manner restrictions. And the limitation on that is that you can't construct regulations at the local level that would have the effect of prohibiting cannabis operators from retail to cultivators from operating within the city or within the jurisdiction. So it isn't quite like alcohol, but there is still local control. And the way I think about this, we had the former district attorney from Boulder County, Colorado, come in and talk about how some jurisdictions effectively tried to block it from happening, and some, like Boulder, thought it was happening and could be a good thing and figured out how what kind of zoning restrictions they would want to have in place early and prepared their city for this new industry. And he said they've effectively had no trouble in Boulder. You drive down the street and you can't see the difference between an insurance agency and a cannabis retailer.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Elkins.
That's fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's
good. Everyone must be prepared. Any other questions? Must be worn out from last night. Oh, there we go. Representative Mason.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. And just a couple of comments. I know when I was doing questions when we first passed the medical marijuana, there are a couple of people said, you know, they were okay with the marijuana. It's the alcohol that they really are concerned about. And I know also that the support for this covers from young people to our senior citizens who need it for pain, particularly for pain. So I think the amount of work that has gone in this has been really appreciated, and you know, it's just time for us to do this. So I really appreciate your work on that. I do want to go back to local control. You know, again, it's, we know that a lot of work has gone into this. Do you have any anything that you can say about how local entities have reacted in other states? And at this point, I really have had no questions from local entities about how this is coming forward. So I'm thinking that's a good thing at this point.
Majority Leader Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, and I will say that we have met with the county and city organizations. We have listened to their concerns and tried to address them as best we can. The decision to say that local jurisdictions can't opt out or wouldn't need to opt in to the cannabis marketplace is because the primary goal is to end the illegal marketplace for cannabis in Minnesota and move it into a regulated, safe marketplace. If you have a patchwork of local government jurisdictions that were, in which some places it's legal and some places it's not, we are by doing that, we would be guaranteeing the continuance of an illegal marketplace, a substantial illegal marketplace in Minnesota. And we have seen that fail in places like Colorado. And I think Ms. Grew discussed the regulatory challenges of operating businesses with a patchwork of local regulations, especially for a new industry. So by meeting with those organizations, learning the lessons from other states, we think we have the right balance between a statewide policy that will serve Minnesotans well while preserving the ability of local government units to look after truly issues that relate to zoning, local issues about regulation that will help their communities successfully implement this kind of change in law.
Okay. Can I ask one more question?
Representative Mason, follow up, yes.
Okay, it has to do with the board, and I know that you said you've got a good sized board at this point and probably looking at even more. What I do want to ask is, I think it's essential that this is an effective and efficient board, and so just your comments about how you're putting that together. Thank you.
Majority Leader Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, I was a bit flippant in my description of that at the beginning. We have a 9-member cannabis management board. So the actual governing board is 9 members. It's the advisory committee that is starting to look like the set of Ben-Hur with a cast of thousands. So the advisory committee is important. It's a place for voices to come in and offer direction, but it's becoming very popular to be on that. So we at some point may look at, you know, what is an effective size for an advisory committee.
Representative Mason?
No, thank you very much.
Representative Nash, do you want to go last or do you want to go now?
I'll wait and wrap up for our side, sir.
Thank you. Representative Elkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had thought of one more question. A number of cities have municipal liquor stores. Is it envisioned that a municipality might want to operate a municipal marijuana store?
Majority Leader Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Elkins, subject to correction by House Research, we've discussed that issue, and I believe the bill does permit it.
Thank you.
Representative Elkins. Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is really more of a comment. So I was brought into this conversation by the leader back in early 2019 because I was not a real strong supporter of this legislation. And the leader wanted to have diverse voices as this bill was being crafted. And I just want to say thank you for allowing those voices in the room from our side of the table to hear our concerns and to hear our community's concerns. What I learned, and then I spent the summer door knocking the Plymouth community. And what I learned is door knocking the Plymouth community is there was support, good support for this legislation and the desire to have a safe, regulated, and affordable market to drive out the illicit market. The concerns for maternal health, the concerns for community ability, concern for criminal justice reform, and a good way to structure the license have all been addressed in this bill, and to work in such a comprehensive way across all of these departments. I just want to say thank you for listening to those concerns from the community, from our business leaders. I have gone from being opposed to this legislation to supporting it. And I think the attention to care and detail and the research that our House staff and nonpartisan staff and agencies have done has been remarkable, and the time commitment that has gone into it. So I just want to say thank you for a well-constructed, thoughtful piece of legislation.
Thank you, Representative Claiborne. The next person I have on my list is Representative Kosnick again. Representative Kosnick, another question?
Yeah, thank you. I'll just kind of wrap up. I don't know what your if we're taking a vote or what we're doing. In terms of the agenda here, but I guess, I do appreciate hearing the bill. But as I've talked to some constituents who are, some of course are in favor of it, but, you know, from a public policy standpoint, which is what we are, public policy makers, and talking with other people and reading on this issue, one of the big concerns for me is for every dollar that's gained in tax revenue from the sales of recreational marijuana, it will cost taxpayers about $4.50 to mitigate the effects of such legalization from a study that was provided to me. And that includes health issues, traffic, crime-related costs, and lost productivity. So that's a big concern. I've talked to other legislators at some different conferences in other states that have done this. They shared those concerns. So what they did, and I believe this was in Colorado, they, of course, jacked up the taxes on it so to cover these other expenses, pay for education and other public services. But what that actually did was kept the illicit market, underground market for recreational marijuana flowing. And if you are in that business illicitly currently, it did not provide incentive for you to open up a Main Street business and make it a legitimate business. So that was kind of interesting. So I think my thought would be that there's still more more that we can learn from other states that are doing this. And of course, you know, legalizing recreational marijuana will increase use among adults, college students. We expect that. I don't know what the permitted age would be, but I would expect that, you know, something new on the market would be available. We would expect that increased use in those categories, but I'm also more concerned about that the youth use was also up 5%, and you think we're going to regulate it, and we know even with other products that you're supposed to be 21 to get, it's available in youth. We have a problem in our high schools with youth experimenting with alcohol and other issues like that. We didn't hear too much about the mental health issues that are correlated with the use of marijuana. We've received letters from the mental health organizations, the University of Minnesota, and other research. So that's another concern for me. I do think it's worth taking a look at some of the, as the Mayor Carter had mentioned, and Representative Winkler, about the criminalization aspects for personal use. I think that's something, Representative Winkler, that you may get broader bipartisan support on that area and reform of that. It's something I would be open to. And then again, I mentioned the employment issues, but back to the effects on youth. And the effects, you know, somebody said this is a gateway to a better life, and that was a nice line, but traditionally we hear that this is a gateway to more illicit drug use. With all due respect, here in the 2nd Congressional District, we had a pro-marijuana candidate died of a drug overdose of more illicit, harder drugs, and that was kind of, out of respect to him, wasn't really broadcast in the media that well, but that was right in the middle of the campaign season. And it's tragic what happened to that person. But I think it's also emblematic of what the real issue and concerns are, and they're very real. I will tell you on a personal level, if there's anybody from Lakeville watching that hasn't heard me say this, I think there are concerns, like I mentioned, among our youth in the community like that I represent, or Representative Claiborne or Bonner, a lot of students, and we want to hope that they can achieve and be prepared every day to learn, all our students really, but especially growing communities, to be ready and to achieve the most that they can. And as their brains and bodies are developing, introducing this creates very, very real concerns. And I will share with you, I have a nephew hanging out at a skate park out in Plymouth, Representative Claiborne. My sister lives out there. And at the age of 13, was introduced to some older kids and just try a little bit of weed and started partying a little bit like that. And so it did escalate. Sadly, he's 23 years old, 10 years later. Right now, he's in rehab. He's almost died of heroin overdose 4 times. And in that last 10 years, think of how many times he's been in rehab centers. 5, 6. I was talking to my mom, his grandma. I thought it was 4, 5, or 6 times that he's had in relapse. And he's done well. When I saw him at Christmas time, I didn't know this. He's been in rehab 20 times, people. He's almost died 4 or 5 times of heroin overdose. I don't think that the making this a legitimate market and trying to regulate it, I don't know that that's enough to save other kids like this. If you're an adult, maybe an old hippie in your 60s, 70s, want to take some gummies, I get it. You're probably more mature about the decision you're going to make. But when you're 13 when you're 21. I just have real issues with that. Obviously, it's very close and personal, but there are stories like this across the board. And as I mentioned, even the candidate that was running for public office to promote this particular issue succumbed to these challenges. So I think we have a little bit more work to do, but I appreciate Representative Winkler bringing this to the committee, even though I didn't want to really get up on a Saturday morning and do this and then go back this afternoon. But I'm glad that we had the ability to hear this, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the time and the comments.
Representative Koznick, you mentioned a report. If you could forward that, a link to that or a copy of that to Mr. Amon, our staff, we can get that out to the rest of the committee. It'd be interesting to read that also.
Yeah, it was, Mr. Chair, it was provided to me a couple of years ago by James Backstrom, Dakota County Attorney, in cooperation with Sheriff Tim Leslie, Dakota County Sheriff. The links are on here, and I tell you which they're hyperlinks. So I'll have to go back and get the document, but yeah, I'll look for that and share it with the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Koznick. Representative or Majority Leader Winkler.
Mr. Chair, well, first of all, Representative Koznick, I just wanted to express my concern for your nephew and understand and have had my own family members go through this cycle. And so my response to you is starts with just recognizing the pain and the ways in which especially young lives, but all lives can be cut short and curtailed, deeply harmed, ending in early loss of life due to abusing certain drugs and having a cycle of abuse. I would distinguish, though, between the story that you've told about the dangers of heroin fundamentally and cannabis. Cannabis is widely accessible to youth today. Two-thirds of American teens say it is easy or very easy to get access to. That's under the prohibition model. In addition, there is research and data coming out of Colorado and I think Washington State indicating that youth use of cannabis declines after legalization. And we have not seen, and there's no suggestion anywhere that there's been a significant increase of youth use of cannabis in states that have legalized. So your concern about youth access is important, and it's very important to me. It's important to a lot of members of our committee. I have two teenage sons and one who will be soon in West Metro Public Schools where cannabis is widely available. To think that somehow under our current system, they couldn't access it right in school right now is, well, Saturday, but that is not the world we live in. The advantage of having a legal regulated marketplace in which the illicit market is no longer operating is that you know where in the community cannabis is coming from. In Colorado, kids are more likely to get it from their parents than they are from somebody who is selling it illegally. That's not a choice I would make. I don't think that's a very good choice. Cannabis and the adolescent brain are not very well suited to each other. But as a public policy matter, as you said, a legal regulated marketplace is not worse than a failed prohibition model. In many ways, it's better. And the last thing I would say is that there are, the Mile High Institute in Colorado, which is funded by the DEA and has supported a lot of very flawed research indicating that the sky is falling when states legalize. The fact is, that's not the actual experience. There have been mistakes made in California, Colorado, and other states where a lot of the concerns, for example, kids getting access to cannabis products in Colorado was an early problem because they didn't do it right. They learned from their lessons. And in our bill, we have a prohibition on marketing that would be appealing to kids. We have a prohibition on creating products that would be appealing to kids, even by mistake. So we are learning those lessons as best we can. I'm not saying that that there's aren't two ways of looking at this issue. There are, but I think I want to distinguish between the genuine concern for family members and kids and how we create a policy response to that and making sure we're separating that from misinformation, which is plaguing, has been plaguing this issue. Reefer madness has been alive and well for a long time.
Representative Claiborne, you were mentioning you wanted to.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to echo, I'll start with echoing the comments that Leader Winkler just made. Addiction in any family is awful. Many of us understand that very, very well. And to Representative Kosnick, I am so sorry for the pain. It is always difficult to see a young person's life go down that path. And I know in the districts that I represent, Wayzata, Robbinsdale, and Osseo, the use of illicit marijuana is, or cannabis is awful. It is plentiful. Any student who wants to find illegal product can do so. And in the Wayzata district in particular, with money being more plentiful, we do have problems with heroin use. We have lost multiple students to overdose. It is a growing concern and problem in our district for decades. It is, as I said earlier, it was very hard for me to get behind this piece of legislation. And it is in talking to our students, in talking to our families, in talking to our public safety director, that I have been able to say, okay, we need a well-regulated and clean, clean marketplace. The concerns that you have, you know, I don't want to minimize those. But I do want to say that your reference to 60s hippies, I hope that wasn't an ageist remark because I have gray hair. I've never been a cannabis user, and I don't consume drugs at all. I hardly take an aspirin. So I hope that wasn't directed to my age or my hair color or my person. So I just want to
Mr. Chair, if I could interject, no, that's to one of my conservative supporters that wants me to support this. He likes the gummies.
All right, perfect. I will say that there are many seniors in our district who do want the gummies for the very reasons that were addressed by one of our testifiers. They're looking for something that'll just take the pain, the edge of the pain from rheumatoid arthritis or injuries, or PTSD out of their daily lives. So I'll leave it at that. And Representative Kosnick, I'm glad that wasn't directed at me. So take care and thank you.
It looks like we're not everybody's waking up from last night. Representative Bonner, you're next on my list.
Thank you. And you know, I might be fortunately or unfortunately very much in the same vein as Representative Claiborne. And you know, I certainly understand and appreciate it. And I appreciate what she said about not minimizing some of the current concerns that Representative Kosnick brought up, because I will be very frank, many of them are the same or similar, you know, talking about concerns at work, talking about youth access, all of those kinds of things. And much like Representative Claiborne, I was also one of those folks in on those early work groups. And I'm sure that Representative Winkler will possibly acknowledge part of the reason that I was appointed to that position is because I was a skeptic. I really had vast concerns about the approach to this and how we do this in a really responsible way. And you know, I think we all realize that this is sort of the direction that the world is moving. And I think we have two options. We can either shape the process ourselves or be caught up in it. And we've seen what happens in states where they sort of get caught up in that situation. And we in Minnesota have a really unique opportunity to shape what our future looks like, to look at the lessons learned from other states who've gone before us, to avoid those pitfalls, and to really be thoughtful about the approach that we take. I want to first say that I'm really delighted at a couple of things on this bill and some of the evolution that's come along. The first is the local craft model that really puts a focus on equity, that puts an emphasis on our agricultural sector and keeping things within our communities, and keeping that the money, the economic benefits within our local communities, and particularly in greater Minnesota, where I'd rather have that money stay here in our rural communities, in our state, rather than going to large corporations and conglomerates, not only because I think it's better for Minnesota, but also I worry about the large outsized influence that large corporations could have on marketing and lobbying around these issues. So I do appreciate that. The other thing is, I really want to say that there's been a tremendous effort on what this looks like from an equity lens and how we associate things in the criminal justice system, kind of making right some things that have been vastly out of line for quite some time. And I'm really thoughtful at all of the time and effort that's gone into that. I'm really thoughtful on the way, or appreciative of the way that we've thought about the layers, and distributing this in a very equitable way from cultivation to distribution to sales. That has been really impressive in how we've managed to navigate through that. And then I wanted to just mention that there are a few of the reasons why I have evolved so far on this, not only because we've made great progress, but I share some of the concerns about youth access, and in particular because minds are still growing. We know that up until about age 25. And I know that there's been a large conversation around how we make sure, as Representative Cleburne mentioned, that this is a clean, well-regulated system that hopefully prevents this from getting into the hands of those young and developing minds.
Representative Bonner, can you wrap up? I'm the majority leader needs to leave at 9:40. So you got two more questions here. So if you can wrap up, if there's great.
And lastly, I just, so I'm grateful for that. And then I was actually on my last point, Mr. Chair, and that is, the other piece of this and what has helped me evolve is the same, is talking to people in my community, having those conversations. I spoke to an older couple in Osseo who said to me that for decades, she couldn't participate with her children. She couldn't go to their sports, engage in their activities. She couldn't even play with her own children. And now, because of medical use, she is obviously not smoking anything. She prefers the gummies and the oils. But she said, and I watched her husband and her both nearly break into tears as she explained how she's now able to sit on the floor and play with her grandchildren, something she couldn't do for decades, and how it vastly changed their family. And so I think that I'm grateful for all the work and the evolution that's come along on this bill. And I still have remaining questions that I'll continue to watch, but I do appreciate the vast amounts of effort.
Representative Quam and then Representative Nash can do the cleanup. And Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And listening to some of the testifiers, I think, frankly, there are lots of issues with medications that this is what we prescribe for everybody, and it doesn't work for all groups and all people don't react the same. And I think you know, if we did the pharmacogenomic testing and you found the right medicine, they could find relief. I'm always cautious about the self-medicating aspect that you might be obscuring some other condition. The other concern, I like the approach of having a unified statewide as opposed to the cities implementing, but I also remember a lot of the cities were leading in the smoking, the vaping, and some of those other activities. So I think it'd be good for this bill if we looked at tying in to avoid some of the issues with vaping, because who knows what they add to some of that. And so that'd be, I think, a good thing. Also, in past years, Chair Carlos borrowed from one of my my bills about having, looking at scientific, what are the levels for impairment for driving or operating, you know, equipment and stuff like that. I think the state should assist in those type of background, you know, tests and points, just so that we do have the confidence of a little bit of safety interjected. You know, and frankly, we survived coming out of Prohibition, and I would not be surprised if at some point in the future we do some sort of a legalized, but I think we need to be more complete in our thoughtfulness of avoiding unintended consequences, because I do think there are some issues that have popped up in other states, and I would like us to have a really thorough investigation. So when we have a committee, if it's advisory, et cetera, including people that are not all pro, but people that have some concerns, so you have that debate.
Can you wrap up, Representative Quam? Representative Nash wants to do the follow-up, and we need to get to a vote.
Well, certainly, Mr. Chair, but, you know, frankly, we had quite a bit of time for the testifiers, and I'm trying to assist the author of the bill to have a more complete bill so that it has a better, you know, chance of going forward. But I'll sit back and let Representative Nash speak.
Representative Nash, wrap up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll start off by saying, you know, I have never tried this and don't intend to, but I do recognize the medicinal values of this. And I felt as though some of the testimony that we've heard is a conflation of the impact, ability, and value of medical with the legalization of recreational marijuana. So I think that we should not measure this bill with the same measuring stick that that medicinal should have been measured with. But I guess I'm a little concerned with really one of the very first statements that Representative Winkler made was that this is seeking to eliminate the illicit market. And I wrote it down exactly as he stated it. You know, I lived here in Minnesota as a kid. We then moved to Colorado after that. And then eventually I made it back home. But here is what I know, having spoken to friends who still live there, talking to family members who still live there. And a buddy of mine that I played football with is the chief of police in one of the suburbs in the Denver metro area. The illegal or illicit market has not gone away. And there are a great number of articles that are out there that make it abundantly clear that it has not gone away, and that much like we would expect, that the illicit market has reacted to market forces and has simply lowered their price and still has a great grasp or reach into the marketplace, if you want to call it that, for those who wish to consume their illegal product. So it hasn't gone away. So let's not let's not be too Pollyanna-ish there and hope that the same would be here. But I wanted to focus, I guess I have just a matter of minutes, Mr. Chair. We'll save some of our fire for the floor. But yesterday on the floor, I was roundly criticized for being anti-local control. There was a fairly lengthy soliloquy by one member from your side about how I am just the worst in the world for being anti-control, local control. And as a former mayor, we had conversations about another subject that we put into local ordinance that we did not want in our city. And that was for an adult bookstore or adult stores like that. And we put that into our ordinances. What Representative Winkler's bill would seek to do is to stifle the voices of locally elected officials who may have a higher level of support and input from their community. And their community may say, we don't want this here. What Representative Winkler's bill is doing is effectively stifling the voice of local elected officials. And again, by the measuring stick that was issued last night on the floor, apparently that's a really bad thing. And I agree that that is a bad thing. I can't imagine how somebody who advocates or who represents the side that advocates for almost unfettered local control, that this is something that they're advocating. There are a lot of issues with this. I think those are still probably likely to get hammered out as this wends its way through the House. It will not go anywhere in the Senate. We know that to be an incontrovertible fact. But I guess I will say, you know, this is, from my perspective, still a fairly, if not very, contentious issue, that this is something that has been controversial. And I find it ironic that we have this controversial bill, again, wending its way through the system, and we can't even have hearings on some alcohol bills that some of us have authored. That's more commentary, but I think that the lack of local control, the lack of some of the testing that Representative Kosnick talked about, and the I think the naive perspective that it's going to eliminate the illicit market is really something that is untenable, and I just can't support this. I'm going to be voting no and would encourage my members to do the same.
Leader Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, thank you for your time this morning. I will say, Representative Nash, that Colorado made mistakes in how they approached this, having a county-by-county approach, having the approach of looking for tax revenue as opposed to just the revenue necessary to keep the system running. And a number of other mistakes led to the continuation of the illicit marketplace. I am not saying that it's possible to eliminate it immediately, but I think we have learned those lessons. And that is why we have the statewide approach that we do. So those two things are in conflict with each other, and it's better to move towards a system of safe, legalized, regulated cannabis in Minnesota where people can access it for personal reasons, for health reasons, and that Minnesotans can make these decisions in a healthy, thoughtful way with an effective system of public oversight. And that is exactly what this bill represents. So, Mr. Chair, I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. And with that, members, Ms. Spreck, I'll renew my motion that House File 600 be re-referred to the Education Finance Committee. And Ms. Spreck, if you want to take the roll. You're muted.
Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Carlson votes aye.
Representative Nash?
Nash votes no.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski? Representative Elkins?
Elkins, aye.
Representative Greenman?
Aye.
Representative Cleborne?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
No.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative New Brindley?
No.
Representative Pulaski?
Pulaski, no.
Representative Quam?
No.
Representative Drazkowski? With a vote of 7 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails.
The motion prevails. The bill's on its way to the Education Finance Committee. Thank you, Representative Winkler, and thank you to all the testifiers. With that, members, there's nothing else on our agenda this morning. I'll look forward, if we need to have another meeting, they'll be called at the by the chair, and we'll send out notice of those. And with that, members, we are adjourned.